Hey, y'all.
¿Qué lo que?
Welcome back to Hey, y'all, ¿qué lo que? The podcast where we talk about cultural similarities, the challenges of getting older, and meeting each other along the way. I'm Bernard.
Hi, and I'm Elizabeth.
Yeah, and we really first want to thank y'all for listening to the last two episodes. We've been in this rhythm of doing two-part episodes where we might talk about two things from two different perspectives. The last two was about music and food. So thank y'all for tuning in on those. And Liz, tell them what this episode's going to be about.
Yeah, so as you all can see, well, you can see us, which is different.
A treat.
But yeah, this is a treat. But we have our dear friend Richie with us. Yeah, so he hit us up and was like, hey, I have a really good idea for an episode. You should, you know, maybe talk about an American Dominican soldier who's traveled a lot and who has different perspectives and yada, yada, yada. And we were all over that.
Absolutely.
So here he is live in the flesh. if you're listening, you can hear him. But if you're watching us, you can see him.
So yeah. Live and direct.
Yeah. So we're going to be talking to him. We're going to ask him a couple of questions. He's very excited. but another thing too, we want to make sure that we mention to our audience, like, you guys, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, all that good stuff. We
Kwanzaa,
hope you guys,
Hanukkah, whatever you celebrate,
all of it. It's 'tis the season for the holidays. We are kind of paying homage to our soldiers, those who sometimes who cannot be technically with their family during this time, by talking to our friend Richie today.
And more so with COVID now. I mean, families just can't be together in general, but everyone is familiar with soldiers that can't be there for the holidays every year.
So yeah. So Bernard, like, how do you, let's introduce Richie.
Yeah. So the man of the hour, right? So going all the way back to high school, which seems like an eternity ago. I saw that, Richie. seems like an eternity ago. You know, that's really when we met Richie and his little brother, Jeffrey. Richie is of Dominican descent. You know, he was on the baseball team in high school, which we're going to talk about that a little bit. And what that was like. He's currently...
I am not an active service member anymore. I was for 8 years. And now I am a reservist, and I work with a GS pay grade for the Army as well. So yes, I get to grow a beard and now wear the uniform all the time. So depression went down like 60%.
Which is awesome. Yeah. So he has a unique experience, right? I mean, he was born in the Dominican Republic, right? And grew up here in the United States mostly. Decided to serve. Extremely thankful, extremely proud of him. Without further ado, we're actually going to go ahead and jump into this interview now. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Liz.
No, it's okay. Before we get started, I didn't even realize I did this, but this is kind of appropriate. The pants I'm wearing are American flag pants.
America.
No.
I didn't realize I was so on theme.
You really are, Liz.
I have my
you
Christmas really sweater. Thing. Yeah, I know. And my patriotic pants. Anyways. Bernard, take it away. I'm sorry.
So let's start at the beginning. When I was in high school, I grew up playing baseball. It's pretty much embedded in your DNA when you're Dominican, right? The women play a little baseball with the guys when you're younger. A lot of the guys grow up and play baseball. It's pretty much like soccer, like everywhere in the world. And when I was a sophomore in high school, I heard about this guy who was like a senior. And he was on the varsity team. Look at him now. And he was on the varsity team, and he was really good. And people kept talking about him, like, yo, do you know this Dominican guy? This is this Dominican guy. This Dominican guy. Mind you, and they would come to me because I was one of, like, three Dominican people in our high school, right?
I managed to find you all.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Liz has, like, a Dominican, like
detector, a radar.
Like a radar. And she found all of us, you know, so... So Richie, I kind of just want to pick your brain a little bit. Like, how was, because I know you only played for 1 year. Like, real quick, can you just kind of go through like what that was like? Because I know the coaches were crazy about you and everything.
Oh yeah, it was definitely a culture shock coming down south. You know, that's okay. The deal. You know, growing up in the city, you barely see any grass.
Which city?
New York City. So, of course, over there, Ridgewood and Brooklyn side, went to Franklin K. Lane High School over there. It was really high on crime, top three. I'm not really bragging about that, but there was no school spirit, obviously.
Concrete jungle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people bragged about fights instead of school spirit and what we're going to do at the pep rally. I didn't even know what a pep rally was until I came down south.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah, it's just like I come down south and it was just a culture shock, you know, especially with so much space and nature. nicely cut, clean grass.
And the trees, like, when you get off the plane, you see the trees on the way to your house.
The little things, you know, and just not every piece of land is light, is lit. So, you know, it was definitely shocking. You know, I was in awe coming down south, and then, you know, people's hospitality, people waving and stuff. In New York City, you probably get waved at if something bad's going to happen or something. I don't know.
Appreciate. So you made it to the south and everything. You had this culture shock. You made it to Stockbridge.
Yeah.
And it seems like baseball was like one of the first things that you really like clinged on to.
My parents came down to visit. You know, my mother's sister, Aura, and they lived in Henry County, and they bought a house over here on paper before they even headed back. So I looked up what is in this Stockbridge, Henry County, and I thought I would be going to Henry County High School. They were the defending state champs. So I'm just like, I am willing to go down there. No problem at all. Yeah, let's go.
So basically you were going to go there because of like baseball. Their baseball team was really good.
Yeah, I played in one of New York City's best baseball teams up in New York as well. It's called the Youth Service. And some names like Manny Ramirez and Julio Lugo back mm-hmm. then, and now Pedro Betances and Dellin Betances for the closer for the New York Yankees.
Oh, you
know,
wow.
He was in the same class as me, and we were playing for youth service at the same, you know, same time. So
really?
Yeah, it's a really respected, program over there. And I had no problem coming down and actually exploring because you guys get to – the weather's better and the facility is better. And, you know, I want to play on real grass. As weird as that is, I want to play on real grass instead of turf. Turf hurts, especially starting on it. Yeah, so I was excited.
But then you found out that you were going to come to Stockbridge High School and not Henry County High School. So how was that when you figured that out?
The pros of that was that my house was in the neighborhood behind it. So I could cut through some people's backyards and make it to school on time because I didn't have a license to drive a car to school. So, yeah, I was, you know, that was the good part of it. And I was happy to go to Stockbridge because, you know, I could just wake up at any time. And I love that part. The little things.
It is the little things. Well, I was going to say baseball is awesome and high school is great, but what happened after high school?
After high school? Well, my senior year with the varsity team wasn't that great. I started off going into the season with a hamstring injury, which just nagged me the rest of the season. And then, you know, psychologically, I thought that a lot was expected from me, and I didn't perform 110% like I would. And, mm-hmm. you know, and I bounced back, and I went to the Dominican Republic right after I graduated at 17, you know, and just went to played with Luis Polonia's program. That's he's got 5 World Series rings. That's a pretty much stealing bases. He was a runner pretty much back then. And I played in Santiago, and you know, over there in El Cibao, in the same stadium that Las Águilas Cibaeñas play, which is the one of the teams that has the most championships in the Dominican Republic. And I enjoyed my time over there. Got to meet a lot of ex-pro baseball players, current baseball players, and minor league baseball players, and got to get taught by many others with great experience and great talent. And that was great.
You were going to play baseball.
Yeah, if I applied myself on and off the field, most definitely, you know. But that's the thing. Natural talent can only take you so far, but, you know, like I kind of like to drink a lot over there.
Is that what happened when you went to DR? Like, were you like distracted by like just like this wonderful world and like this awesome scenery that you had around you, or like, because sounded like
from the woman to, you know, the you know, club and everything. It's a great experience, you know.
18-year-old baseball player.
Yeah.
In DR, like, come on now.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was great, and it was fun while it lasted, but at the end of the day, you know, I ain't paid my dues, and that's on and off the field, hitting the gym, getting to practice, and no excuses. My shoulder did get screwed up pretty bad towards the end, but you know, like, I was going to a Florida Marlins tryout because one of their scouts really liked seeing me throw a laser beam from the left field wall all the way to home plate, and he's just like, yeah, get him ready. So got together with a different pitching coach, and he showed me how to throw pointing the ball out behind me and then going in, and that just opened up my shoulder, and didn't go well from there. Mm.
Yeah. So your shoulder gave out. You know, you realized you probably didn't have the passion that you needed, like, to really get you to the next level. Then what happened?
Yeah, I was too comfortable, and came back to the States, obviously, and with the tail between my legs, you know, so to speak.
Aw.
Yeah, I went, did a little college here in Morro, and also started looking into some odd jobs, and it's just like, until I got strong enough to do push-ups, more than 40 push-ups straight without my shoulder hurting, that's when I looked into joining the military. I really wanted to be a Marine, but my cousin, who's like growing up, was my big brother, Anthony. He told me, don't go Marines. They don't have any funding, to go to the Army and jump out of planes and get paid a little bit extra money every month and so to speak, have better education and educational opportunities in the military. So I went to the Army and joined out of New York City, and I moved back for about 6 months. And there goes a whole new world of holy shit. Yeah. As a grunt, that's what you're going to get.
that's interesting that you mentioned that about your cousin, because your cousin's Dominican too, right? I'm assuming.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. Yeah, and that kind of sheds light on something that I think a lot of people really don't think about, which is the fact that there actually like is like a whole lot of diversity in the military. You know what I mean? Once you put on the uniform, I mean, everyone is the same. You know what I mean? But
you guys are all soldiers.
Exactly. Everyone's a soldier. But as far as like your cultural backgrounds, like, people come from all kinds of places. So I'm curious to know, like, what was it like being both like American from a Dominican family going into the military?
Well, it's definitely a little bit different, especially being like first generation, you know, like going into the military for at least one side of the family or both sides of the family per se. From the beginning, it's a shock. You get to basic training and they shave your head and they all give you the same clothes. All that personal stuff you got, they take it away. So they make you all one one for all for one type stuff. And then, or if you want to see it a certain way, you're all equally worthless, you know, type stuff. You all look the same. You all dress the same. You're all going to work as a team and be one, you know, together and go forward, you know, and serve your country well. And from there, you know, it's just, you start noticing, especially being infantry, Hispanics, probably like 4% of people. And if you meet most of the Hispanics, they're either Mexican or Puerto Rican. Dominican, hard to find Dominican motherfucker. And anywhere combat MOS relation. So it was, I was definitely stuck out.
Percent. You were unique.
I was definitely unique. One, New York City. Not that many people from New York City joined the military. And then two, I joined Combat Arms, which is a lot of Caucasian from the countryside folks out there.
It's a bunch of good old boys. I know. Yeah, we out there fighting. Country, yeah.
Like 80% of the military of the Combat Arms is pretty much Caucasian, you know, good old boys. So I definitely stuck out, and country music, I didn't enjoy it at all. And, you know, I got used to it. And you become one with, you know, because growing up in New York City, the white people that you do see really are like Albanian or Polish or something like that. That's if you hang out on
the street. We're like exceptionally rich.
Yeah. You know, like of the city. If we go downtown Manhattan, you know, the rich, you know, rich people, and you don't really talk to them. Like, you're on the further side of the five boroughs type stuff. So, oh yeah, you know, I know, you know, just like the military, you gotta know your place, and you're wearing it on your shirt, on your uniform. Know your place. You're not up there. You shouldn't be talking buddy buddy with the other person, with the, you know, like officers and stuff. But yeah, those country folks, Hispanics, blacks, you know, like same thing with blacks, is just like 1% or 2% in the combat related side. Like if you're Hispanic or you're minority and you want to hang out with your own people in the military, the job to join is not combat related. I'm serious. Your supply
word to the wise.
Yeah, your supply folks, your mechanics. You go in over there, it's all freaking minorities. And they're all hanging out. They're all freaking playing dominoes and shit. They all just like, you know, good. Yeah, they're having fun over there. And at the same time, you know, like on the combat side, everybody is just like, holy crap. You know, like we're strict. We're just getting after it. We're, you know, we're going outside the compound to, you know, do our job. And that's just like pull security and pick up whatever, you know, fell or protect on explosive ordinances, or, you know, or just like something blew up over there. So we got to go walk around and see what the hell blew up and then get shot at, you know.
Shit.
Yeah, it's a good time. You know, if after a while, it's just you get used to it. And it's just like, all right, if today's my day.
It's just another Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, somebody blows up, pick up the body parts. It's just, you know, it's just another day at the office.
Lord Jesus, I really respect your ability to do that, because a lot of people cannot, will not, don't even, they think they can, and then they get in that situation, and then they realize, holy shit, I'm really not built for this. Like, I remember you telling us at a party or something like that, about like being in the middle of combat and being around people. There are some people that would fight back and knew what to do in the moment, and other people, and both trained the same way. Other people that would just fold, and you're like, yo, you got to get out the way, because we're in the middle of this firefight and you need to move. You know what I mean? Like, I just remember you telling me that.
Yeah. That's more like a comparison. You know, of course, everybody joins and does the same basic training. And that is weapons. Get acquainted with the weapons, battle drills, you know, get acquainted with knowing what to do, when to do them if something happens. And of course, like we were talking specifically about how they got rid of shark attack. And shark attack is when they freaking, the drill sergeants get at you and you're about to show up to your last facility where you're going to last 14, I don't know how many weeks it is now. I heard 21, 22. When once you get there, they go through a shark attack and then they're just screaming at you. You have all your equipment on you, which is like three bags, two of those little green beanies, which is called duffel bags, and then your rucksack.
How many pounds is that?
Depends how you distribute your weight. You know,
many pounds is heavy. That shit is heavy.
All in total is like at least 80 pounds of equipment.
Jesus Christ.
And you're just like up to the brim, like a donkey, just carrying all this stuff. And then they're just like, okay, drop your shit, run over there, crawl from over there. And then they're just like screaming at you the entire time. And then, you know, they smell fear, you know, and you don't want to be that guy.
That stinks of fear.
Oh, yeah. And he's like, you Full Metal Jacket? That's not a joke. Yeah. That's how it was a little bit. Of course, it's dialed down since the 80s because of, you know, emotions and stuff like that. That is a lot. That's considered a lot more into building our soldiers today. You know, sexual harassment training and equal opportunity training and caring about the soldier mentally because of all the post-traumatic stress disorders. You know, obviously, you don't get it from war. You get it from everyday life, and the soldier is not just there for, you know, a term. He's there for at least 3 years at a minimum. So, yeah. Caring.
So, did Richie, who signed up at the recruiting office, think about this at all?
I did.
Like, who was that person?
I was completely ready with all the infantry stories that my cousins told me and everything during the invasions in Iraq into the 03-04, which they were there both from the beginning. They told me all those stories, and that's what I really wanted. You know, I really became patriotic, you know, with all these stories and the close calls with the bullets flying and clearing rooms and, you know, and the stacked bodies of just bad guys, good guys, small. So I was ready for that, you know, but the great majority of people that join, they don't even know what they join. They just want to serve, and they have no idea what the job entails, and they have no idea what they're going to be sacrificing. They have no idea what being away from home is and being away from their mommy, their wives, whatever. They want
their college paid for, and they want to travel.
Yeah. The infantry is definitely not what you want to join to do to get that knocked out. You know, you just join the reserves and join something else. Combat related, you know, it's high. It's intense. We're moving, and things needed to get done yesterday, and that's how it rolls. Yeah.
So I mean, I'm curious because your little brother joined the service. He joined the military too, right? Jeffrey did.
He did, and he really wanted to join the infantry, and I kept saying, "No, you don't want that."
Yeah, Jeffrey's a different kind of guy. He's not like Richie.
Well, Jeffrey, so he's. I mean. I feel like we all have different strengths, and where he joined is probably like just so perfect for him because he's smart. He's got head smarts and he's in a good space. But what were you going to say, Bernard? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, Jeffrey's mind just works differently in general. I feel like, you know what I mean? So it's a good thing that you were a good big brother and you advised him like, yo, this, I know you and this isn't for you. You know what I mean? My brother was the same way, but I'm curious to know about like your family dynamic. Like, how does your family feel about y'all, both of y'all being service members? Like when you first signed up compared to like how they feel now?
Well, definitely. my mother with, Ramona, of course.
Who's Ramona?
Ramona, the mother of Anthony and Sandy.
Your cousins.
Went before me.
Your aunt.
For the invasion of Iraq. She went through some tough times, and she did not want to go through that because not knowing because obviously you're fighting a war over there and you don't always have communication and you don't have the right stuff to live comfortably, per se, because you're just moving, especially during an invasion, because you're just like, this is your home today. Tomorrow, your home is 30 miles down the road or something like that. So, you know, like there was very low communication and very little communication, may I say. And then she did not want to go through that. And she kept saying no for a couple of years. But after a while, you know, she warmed up to it. And I kept showing her facts on how the military takes care of you, benefits, and how they pay for your school and your set. Respectively after you leave the military, and how, you know, you're going to be this asset to the world, or at least viewed as an asset to the world if I do join. Mm-hmm. And of course, you got to lie a little bit. Yeah.
sprinkle a little fibs in there. Just a little bit. A little bit. Okay. Yeah. Cause I'm really curious because I know Liz and I, as we were preparing for this show, you know, I was telling her, I was like, nobody in my family is in the military. Like, my family is very Dominican on both sides. On my mom's side, they're Dominican from New York. On my dad's side, they're like, a lot of them are Dominican and they're still in DR. So on neither side, not the ones in New York City or the ones in DR, would they ever understand if I were to join, like, if I were to become a service member, they'd be like, why, you know? So I was just really curious to, like, to get, you know, to look into, like, that family dynamic and how that all went down. And I imagine that there was some friction up front, and it sounds like there was, but it's cool that you were able to, you know, kind of help your mom understand and warm up to what was going on and everything. So that's pretty cool.
Oh yeah. And to finish answering your question, how the family is accepting now. Even my sister wanted to join, and my mother was like, pretty much,
really?
Yeah, join, you know, that'll help you, you know,
wow.
Straighten up your character and, you know, get you a backbone and all that stuff and be more and, progress, because I seem to be, like I'm doing well and, I'm not begging for money or not living, you know, bad or anything like that. So for her, it seems like I did the right decision. My brother went the same direction, and he's doing well as well. And, you know, she's very accepting of the military now. Of course, she understands there are dangers to it, but very accepting now.
I feel like with her, like with what you just said about her, I think her thing is more so like, it's an outlet for my children to go down, and they're going to kind of like get their heads screwed on straight. It's like, I did my best as a parent, and you know, I'm sure like as a parent, they want to they want to see you grow and they want to see you guys be awesome. But I feel like a lot of parents probably feel that way with their kids. And this is just based on like with my cousins and stuff. Like I got a lot of family members in the military. Like almost every male family member that I have in my family is in the military. And their parents feel that way. They're like, oh yeah, no, you need to learn structure. Oh, you need to learn time management. Oh, you need to learn these things. You want to join the military? Sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, like you were saying, I mean, there are a lot of other things that come with being in the military, right? Not if you're, I mean, if you are trying to join the infantry, then absolutely. But we were talking about how, like, you know, some people just join for like the traveling and like to get their school paid for. And I know
I don't know if that's a good race.
but you have told us about your traveling experiences, and I know that in particular, you talked about going to Italy. I want to know, did anybody stop you on the street and start just speaking Italian to you, or just ask you, like, you know,
are you Italian?
Aren't you Italian?
Yes, I was stationed in Italy, Vicenza, Italy, which to geographically paint a location for you guys, it's about west of Venice. You guys know city of water, pretty much Venice, which is, may I say, breathtaking. Like, I've never seen something so beautiful. This place is a gem. And then it's about west, about 45 minutes. And from Padova, if you guys know Saint Anthony, that's his hometown, you know, where the saint came from. It's about an hour east of it. So there you will find Vicenza. And it's a
Vicenza.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful little town. And you can walk everywhere in it, at least how it used to be. And the 173rd over there is the unit that is there. And it has many Medal of Honor recipients, I believe 18 or 19, and three within the last 10 years. Why? Because it's a tight brotherhood, you know, like the way the base is structured, it is like it makes it a tight brotherhood over there. And it's, you know, when you go overseas, you know, you just like, you want to keep tight and not let anybody just be taken away by the enemy or anything of the sort. But I'm getting off topic. So back on it.
You're not getting off topic at all. Please paint the picture of Italy. Sounds beautiful.
And no, I did not get, are you Italian? It was more like, are you Moroccan? That is their, you know, like in the United States, we have, are you Mexican? You know, like, you're looked down upon. Is if you're Hispanic, you're a Mexican. You know, Moroccans are the problem over there. So it's just like,
are you serious? I feel like Moroccans are always so nice.
They're nice people, but they're a minority over there,
and so they looked at differently over there.
So yeah, obviously, you know, an example is if you're born in Italy and you don't have an Italian parent, you're not born a U.S. citizen. You know, it's like that. You know, that's an American thing, being nice to foreigners, you know, type thing. But yes, I got more, are you Moroccan than Italian?
Interesting. So you feel like people treated you differently when they like assumed you were Moroccan? Like, did you feel that, or that's just something that kind of came up in conversation?
No, they kind of asked me, but Italians in general are real nice and real proper. And, they kind of just brought it up, and I said I was American. Of course, the language changed and the expressions changed a little bit. But they asked me about my accent because I did speak a lot of Italian, you know, like in a sentence, I'll understand 80% of it. And then I'll throw back about 60 with some Spanish words in between because it's really similar. Latin based. And that was where my Spanish accent will come out. And, you know, obviously, you know, they were accepting to me, I would say.
What was the most awkward situation you were in when you were living in Italy?
There you go.
Yeah. This is like awkward, and getting into some locations where it was just really populated, like clubs and stuff like that, really populated by Italian locals. I got some, you know, kind of looks and stuff like that, but I knew I was like a foot taller than everybody else. And I was walking around with my chest high because I knew, because I was in great shape and, you know, I knew some of the language. I didn't let anybody look down upon me, even if they were Ferrari. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I bet you didn't, Richie. I remember being in Peru, actually. I took a trip to Peru in college, and I remember like I was noticeably taller than like every Peruvian in like Lima that I saw. And people would ask me, like, if I played basketball in the U.S., and I'm like, no, I'm, like, very average over there. So,
and there are black basketball leagues all over Europe. If you see a black guy, there, it's probably their star. And it's true.
Exactly.
Look at the Ball Brothers. They're out there playing basketball, you know. Well, they're all in space now, but they, you know, they went through a phase.
So reeling it back in a little bit into the holidays again. I'm curious to know, did you spend any holidays overseas? And if so, what was that like?
Well, definitely. Christmas, you know, there's always somebody that's just like going around with the camera and then just like putting together a video for the company or the platoon. Mm-hmm. And then just like sending it back to the FRG, which is the Family Readiness Group, so they could spread out to the spouses and the rest of the family members over there that they have contact information for, on you know, sending back a happy holidays to the family back home. There's that video, and then there's also charities and churches and other companies that send out care packages. Care packages are really important to us over there, depending on where we're at. And then they're just like stuff that go, which is the hot items are, you know, like, of course, foot powder and then baby wipes. Baby wipes, you could use that everywhere. You know, you got to take those hot showers, you know, you got to hit the hot spots specifically, you know, the armpits, you know, the groin area and, you know, feet. You got to keep that clean. Got to keep that going. You know, everything else.
Everything that stinks.
Oh, yeah. Especially being a grunt on the side of a mountain. Yeah, that works. Yeah.
My nanny. So this is just a shout out to my grandmother. She used to, she would always donate to them. And my cousin was in the military, and she would always send him stuff like that. And I would be like, Nanny, like, why are we buying so much baby powder? Why are we buying so many baby wipes? And that's what she would say. She's like, well, that's what they need. They're like hanging off the side of the mountain right now. They need something to wipe their ass with. So it's really cool to say that when you got those things, that it meant a lot. Cause it's like, you kind of see the end of like something that you've sent off before. So that's cool. What else can we send our soldiers?
Yeah, like specifically saying, you know, like specifically my first deployment, we got everything dropped off by parachute pretty much. So it's just like we're at a place where you can't really drive to safely, so you got to drop everything by air. And sometimes we had water shortages, and those baby wipes are coming big time. So definitely. That's why one instance on why they're so important. And also over there, send any food that you would think would be a treat. You know, obviously, we don't have much in most of the places over there. We don't have a variety that you guys do here in this, you know, like here in the land of the freedom states. So it's just like send stuff that you think would make somebody's day. Also write some, you know, children write letters to us too. And some people just laugh at it, you know, but some people just like take it to heart, you know, they actually carry the letter sometimes. Remember, I carried a letter, you know, for a good while too, for one of those kids, because they actually was really cute and made sense to me at the time. And that was, you know, like hope. Like if you're over there and you lose hope a little bit, just like, what else? What am I here for? Just like, let me keep my shit together, you know, and this letter for this kid, you know, help out, stuff like that. And of course, anything that you think you like, probably somebody over there would like. Yeah.
Really like the little things.
Mm-hmm.
That's little things. Especially if you don't have running water.
Baby wipes.
I say again, baby wipes. That was my favorite. I don't know. I wanted some Slim Jims, but nobody ever sent Slim Jims. But yeah, that's it. I guess
next time I see Slim Jims go on sale, Bernard, this is something we need to remember.
Slim Jims.
We need to buy some Slim Jims and we need to send them overseas.
And I'm going to get Mariah to write a letter.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Mariah, yeah, and I'll get my niece and my nephew to write a letter as well.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and your art class to draw some pictures maybe.
Hey, if they'll appreciate it, I will do it. I'll make it happen.
At least they'll get it.
It'll be appreciated.
Yeah, much appreciated.
So
that's cool.
I mean, you know, everything that you've described so far, Richie, I mean, you've been talking about getting shot at. You've been talking about being in combat, being in infantry, getting essential supplies dropped down from the sky because you can't get where you are in the remote places. I mean, it's really interesting to me personally because, like, you literally have put your life on the line for this country being America. And at the same time, you're culturally Dominican, you know, something that you know, you're willing to give up your life for one country and you've grown up all your life culturally with another country. What has that been like for you? Or have you even thought about it? Like, what's that been?
Well, I just thought, you know, culturally, Dominicans, I don't know. Would you say we're selfish? I know the being Dominican is a vibe, but that's what we do.
Right,
it is. The world, yeah. We get the bachata, merengue, and now that, you know, going hard with the dembow and a little bit of reggaeton, a little bit of that, this. I thought personally, obviously, you know, for the most part of my life at the beginning, I was really unaccepting of losing my Dominican heritage and culturalizing to the American everyday of life, you know, especially going into a white collar job and, you know, stuff like that. I was unaccepting of all that and didn't have an open mind. But now, obviously, I got a white collar job and, you know, I am very much embracing by text, by speaking. Yeah, yo todavía no he hablado ni un chino de español en esta vaina todavía.
That's right. Not even a little bit.
Yeah, I'm speaking proper now. You know, back then I was in New York.
Un inglés machucao.
And it was inglés machucao. So obviously I'm adapting to American culture and I'm taking it in, and that is the way. And that's what I wanted to do on behalf of my family. I put it in, you know, like, thank God all my father's family is in the United States and they're living freely, you know, like in this free country, and they're working and sending back to the American public and building and, you know, living this freedom. Same thing with my mother's family, most of it. So it's just like, I want to go fight for them. I want to go fight for what this democracy is. And I want to defend September 11th specifically, because I decided, because I saw the planes hit the Twin Towers. Because
you
I was,
were there. You were downtown.
I was in New York. I saw it from the distance. It looked like a one-engine airplane. I was in seventh grade class in I-77 in Queens. And then I could see across the Hudson River. And I saw the plane hit. And then I saw the second plane hit. And they look like one-engine airplanes for that distance, but obviously September 11 is my birthday, and it ruined my day as well.
Wow.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
So do you think that was the spark? That's like, you were like, fuck this shit. I got to do something about it.
That was most definitely a spark. Obviously, you know, you go through phases as a kid, and, you know, baseball was my main priority, but obviously giving back as a cop or as a service member was always up most in, you know, like in me. And
Richie, that's awesome.
That's what's up.
And I would have been a cop now too, but then I looked at how many hours they work, and I was just like, I have really given a little bit, and then you fall in love, and then you got to reload, you know, stay at
different locations. And then you fall in love.
Yeah, a little bit of that, you know, babies and stuff, you know. So I would have been a cop in New York City for sure if it wasn't for my situation, you know, at the moment, which I'm happy and I'm trying to make everything work for the best and, you know, carry on the life cycle.
It sounds right. Like, so the question that you originally asked, Bernard, I feel like it sounds more like a people situation, Richie.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's like, yeah, obviously there's these two different cultures, but at the same time, and this is just, I'm complimenting you, Richie. This is something I never really knew about you until we just opened up and had this long conversation, but I want to compliment you as a human being for just being awesome and being like, yeah, my heritage is amazing and it's awesome. And yeah, I do live in America and I am an American soldier, but at the same time, I did this basically for like people. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Thank you for not making me sound that selfish, but
yeah. No.
But of course I was looking for seeing some real action and getting some real trigger time, you know, against some real targets. Moving targets. So yeah.
Yeah, the perfect reason.
Yeah, I was willing to sacrifice my life and I was mentally prepared to just like do that kind of stuff. It sounds really tacky, especially to service members in at the moment to say that, but I was mentally prepared, you know, to, you know, I wouldn't mind, you know, like some people would just say they just show up and they expect to leave perfectly well, you know, like expect some sacrifices, expect the worst and you should be fine.
So
that's a good life quote.
I was going to say, for sure. I mean, that is a fantastic segue into our next question, which was going to be what's some advice you would give future soldiers? And it sounds like expect the worst should be near the top.
Yeah, most definitely expect the worst. If you want to use the military, because the military most definitely is going to use you, is pick a job that you can use in the on the outside, because most of the qualifications you're going to get, you can use on the outside. And also you're going to get college after that too. Just think about this, guys. Experience. Employers want experience. You're not going to get that really unless you sacrifice years or time from your college at your university, wherever it may be. So get the experience, get paid for it, and get the qualifications. Join the military for the specific job you want to do, and don't sign more than 3 years. They tax bonuses more than 45%. Just letting you know. Spread the word.
Now, hold on. You said bonuses.
Can we go back to that?
Again, say that again.
Bonuses. You sign statewide, and they on the states, you know, CONUS, continental of the United States, yeah, you're going to get taxed. So that's 45% of whatever they promised you. That's $10,000, $4,500 you're not going to get. And that's if you pass whatever you agreed to. So, don't let them shove money in your face, because your time is worth more than that little bit of money. Trust me, being in the military seems like a lifetime.
Yeah, I bet it does. And in the same respect, let's make it a little bit more personal. What would Richie now tell Richie at the recruiting office all those years ago?
Like, if you could sit next to yourself and be like, hey, I have something to tell you.
You know, I really had a good plan towards my first 3 years. I had it all set. You know, I was just going to do 3 years, get out, finish college, go back in, become a Marine as an officer, you know, and lead some real troops. But definitely had a baby in between, had some deployments, had some extensions. There was a lot of stuff that kept me off track of my goals, and I just keep changing my plans. You know, like when they ask you, what's your five-year plan? I changed that like 8 times within that
5 years.
Just reacting to my mistakes, or, you know, I live life with no regrets, you know how they say. So I just kept changing it. You know, life, you know, like God has put this in my path for a reason. So I just kept changing and kept owning what I was doing. And,
So what would you tell yourself at the recruiting office back then, what would you say?
Make sure you freaking stay to your plan.
Stick to the plan.
Set yourself reminders. That was I didn't even have a smartphone until like 5 years into my contract. just stick to your plan. That's why I tell everybody else too coming in. Stick to your plan. Don't wing it. I love winging stuff.
We're winging this right now.
You know what I'm saying? I think with that, I think this is a good, what do you think, Liz? This is probably a good place to.
I think this is a good place to like kind of wrap up and figure out what the takeaway is. And then if we want to say more, we can always record more.
Yeah. But thank you so much, Richie. We sincerely appreciate you coming on the show, and we hope to have you back on in the future. So we appreciate
it. Maybe we can team up with USAA or something and like buy some baby wipes on discount and send them overseas.
You know what I'm saying?
Because sounds like.
Or locally, get a church or make a group locally. You guys have.
That would be so cool.
Yeah, definitely.
And we could do like a baby wipe fundraiser to send overseas.
And people can understand how important they are to service.
Wipe people. A soldier's ass. Okay, I think I just came up with a fundraiser. Hey, y'all feel okay?
Circumstances for deployments have changed quite a bit. You know, there's less there's less places in the middle of nowhere. They're more all collectively in a really civilized area now, you know, like FOBs.
Let's do it.
But yeah, that is a great idea, and I appreciate you, Elizabeth. I appreciate you, Señor Mejia. And I came up with an idea to you guys, and you guys actually listened. And appreciate you for having me and for busting my podcast cherry.
You don't have to hang up.
You're special.
Just now. What'd you say?
I don't know. I'm like, you're special to me now because you bust my cherry. I will remember you forever.
Like I said, I never popped an ugly man's cherry.
No homo. My New Year's, I gotta say no homo. My bad.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot Bernard was here. My bad.
Well, again, man, thank you so much. Really appreciate it, and we look forward to having you back on in the future, man.
Yeah, and then let's go ahead and do like our normal spill. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Richie, but just so we get this on audio, you guys make sure you check us out on our Instagram page. It's heyyall_queloque. Where else can they find us, Bernard? On Anchor, mm-hmm. on Spotify.
Apple.
Google Podcasts.
Go on Anchor. Go on our Anchor
just
website.
Go on Anchor.
The link is on our Instagram. Check us out.
All right, this has been Hey Y'all Que Lo Que with Bernard.
And Elizabeth.
And we really appreciate y'all stopping by.
Yeah, thanks for coming through. We can't wait to see y'all next time.